Dave and Janovic.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, back in Washington, D.C., the congresswoman's made no mistake that she is going after House Speaker Mike Johnson.
This is basically a warning, and it's time for us to go through the process, take our time, and find a new Speaker of the House that will stand with Republicans and our Republican majority instead of standing with the Democrats.
The two of them met yesterday for an hour, and he offered her a seat on his, I mean, say this with a straight face, his kitchen cabinet.
Wait, I can't tell if you're joking or not.
I'm reading this article our producer sent to me. He offered her an advisory role on his newly formed kitchen cabinet, which would be, I guess, an advisory role to his speakership. Yeah, proposed a kitchen cabinet of advisors. Johnson.
That feels made up.
Greene a spot on a proposed kitchen cabinet of advisors to the speaker after the nearly hour-long session. But look, she's not been happy with him for several weeks after he kept the government open. She wants him out.
Yeah. Professor James Curry, associate professor of political science at the University of Utah. Is kitchen cabinet, is that just made up for today?
For today.
Okay.
I mean, this is all he can really do in this sense, right? Because he cannot give her one of the formal, like, party leadership positions unilaterally, because that would have to be voted on in the conference and through the steering committee and all these things. So it's really the best he can offer her on a one-on-one basis, is that I'm going to include you in these meetings and in these discussions, and maybe that'll make you happy.
Does she have a chance at getting him tossed?
Maybe. It's really hard to say. And it's also hard to tell if this is real or if it's just posturing. She introduced her motion to vacate not as a privilege resolution, which means she can't call it up on the floor anytime and force us into the chaos that Matt Gaetz forced us into in the fall. It would have to be referred to a committee and considered there, and then it's going to go nowhere. And that suggests to me that this is really just her firing a warning shot, which is what she said, and that it's really her posturing and trying to get some headway out of this, which it seems like she is. I think we'll know it's real if she refiles a motion to vacate as a privileged motion, because then it's probably imminent.
Because it only takes one dissatisfied Republican to put this forth, right? This isn't like you need the majority of the Republicans to get on board. It can be just a Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, it could be anyone. If they want to file it as privileged, then they can bring it up after 48 hours of filing it at any time, and then you have to consider it, which is what privileged means in the context of the House of Representatives. It means it can be forced to be considered at any time. And so, yeah, they didn't change the rule, as some of them suggested that they were going to after the chaos in the fall. And now here we are again.
And as the Republicans only have a one vote majority, what happens? How does this play out if she's the lone holdout?
If she's the lone holdout and everyone votes, then he'd have to play into, is everyone absent? Is everyone present? But even if she's the only one who would vote to vacate along with all the Democrats, it would be tied.
I don't know what happens with a tie.
With a tie, something has to have a majority to pass. So a tie fails.
Oh, okay.
Not like baseball, where tie goes to the runner, tie goes to the defense. But if someone's absent, if anyone else goes along with it, you know, then we're back to having no Speaker of the House and back to having to go through all these things again. Now, the only way that he'd get saved in that situation is if the Democrats support him. But just as before, it's hard to say whether any Republican Speaker of the House would want to be saved by the other party, because then you essentially lose your role as a partisan leader and you're just kind of a clerk.
What's your view on how he's been as a speaker? By the way, this is Professor James Curry with the University of Utah, often a guest of the show when we talk about things back in D.C., because of your understanding of how Congress works. But what's your take on how he's been doing as Speaker?
You know, I think he's done as well as anyone could be expected to do under the circumstances. Clearly, he had a lack of experience with this. Clearly, he's learned a lot about how to try to do this. But you're dealing with a situation where the Republican conference has fewer, seemingly a smaller majority every week, where there's clearly really deep divisions, not like down the middle of the party, but significant enough when you have a slight majority to make doing anything that's even remotely controversial in your own party virtually impossible. He seems to have realized the same thing that Kevin McCarthy and Paul Ryan and John Boehner realized, which is you can't push something that only Republicans like because Republicans can't agree. So you have to push something that both some Republicans and some Democrats would like if you want to do anything. And but that means he's in the same position that John Boehner and Paul Ryan and Kevin McCarthy are in, in that now you have this faction of his party who detests him and is unhappy with him. But I'm not sure there's any other alternative.
And who would want to throw their hat in the ring? We even saw that the last go around. People were like, I'll try. Never mind. I'm out. I don't want to be considered.
It would be the same. I think it's clear that Representative Steve Scalise, the majority leader, still would like to be speaker someday. And maybe you would try. I think Representative Jim Jordan still wants to be speaker. And he would try. But these are members that were both rejected last time around. So there certainly isn't someone else waiting in the wings. There's no one waiting in the wings, which is why this would be just, you know, somehow even worse than last time, because that last time should have demonstrated to everyone that there is no positive outcome from going through this.
Professor Curry, I just continue to feel like Republicans have this really great opportunity leading up to the election to, you know, pretend like they get along, act like they get along, stop fighting over the little things and get behind Speaker Johnson. But I'm not sure they're going to get there. It's been years of this.
Yeah, and I think the reality is that better than 90% of them agree with you and would see it exactly that way. But the problem is when you have a one-seat majority, a two-seat majority, is that it only takes a handful to really disrupt that effort and disrupt that approach to trying to govern and trying to present yourself as reasonable for the 2024 election. And that's exactly what's happening.
And I think the argument that Speaker Johnson makes is compelling in the sense that we could ram something through the House, but there's no chance it's getting through the Senate, and it's certainly not going to get through the president's desk. So why pass some of these more bombastic initiatives?
That's right. And a lot of some of these things they're dealing with now are things that most Republicans want. Most Republicans do support some form of aid to Ukraine. They just, you know, they're specifics. They differ from the Democrats on specifics, but it's accomplishable. Most Republicans want to reauthorize the FISA authorities. And so it's not as if Republicans don't want to do any of these things writ large, and so they're avoiding it because they don't want to give Democrats what they want. Most Republicans want some form of this, but there's a subset that do not want to do any of these things by negotiating with Democrats. But the problem is when the other party, when the Democrats control two-thirds of the government, you kind of have to.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. Jim Curry, who's a professor of political science at the University of Utah. Thanks.
We're going to keep our eyes focused on Washington, D.C. when we invite U.S. Senate candidate Brad Wilson to call in next. Dave, I know you've been wanting to talk about the U.S. debt clock, so I just clicked on it. Woo! I don't even know if I can translate this.
So many zeros.
$34,645,323,160,000. I mean, it's going up so fast, I can't even keep track of it. What's the number one thing that you want to know from Senate candidate Brad Wilson?
So how do we pay it off?